Welcome to the East County Magazine live radio show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio representing the public interest, not special interest. Broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso on KNSJ 89.1 FM, your host, Miriam Raftery.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine and KNSJ. My guest today is Amber Bernal. Amber is a founder of the San Diego Committee for Prisoner Rights, and she recently held an event in San Diego to show solidarity with the longest and largest prison hunger strike in California history. Amber, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Miriam.
Now, California holds 12,000 people in solitary confinement right now, which costs taxpayers $60 million a year or more. And yet, the United Nations condemns the use of solitary confinement as torture if it goes on for more than 15 days. Here in California, in our state prisons and some privately run prisons that the state contracts out to, there are prisoners who've been in solitary confinement for between 10 and 40 years. Amber, how long has this prison strike been going on now?
It originally began in 2011. This year, actually on July 8th, it started. So today is day 50.
And how many prisoners are participating?
Reports as of yesterday were 96 hunger strikers in three prisons and 42 continuously since July 8th.
Wow. Now, I think for many of our listeners, I think the perception out there is that if somebody winds up in solitary confinement, you know, it's probably somebody who was a really violent offender, maybe someone who beat up a guard or another prisoner who's a danger to others. What is the reality in terms of the range of offenses that are landing people in solitary confinement for these long, long periods of time?
The truth is that a vast majority of these men in the security housing unit at this time have not committed any violent crimes while incarcerated. You can go into solitary confinement for a tattoo, a book, legal papers that say something about someone else, or basically anybody just saying your name to get out of the security housing unit.
And why? What is the motive from the standpoint of the people running these prisons? Why are they wanting to put certain offenders into solitary?
I feel that it's a monetary reason. Security housing units is money-making machines.
These private prisons, they're making a lot of money.
A
lot. The people they can put in there.
Yes.
Now, sometimes I understand they're trying to get information. They think somebody may know about maybe gang members, gang affiliations, something like that. But there's no limit to how long they can hold somebody for information purposes?
As of now, there's been no limit.
And there's no due process?
There's no due process. If somebody says somebody's name as an associate or a member, they are not allowed to challenge that accusation. They don't have a court process. They don't even get to know or find out who said the accusation.
That's really shocking and troubling. Now, some of the people that wind up in there did commit violent offenses before they went into prison. Others did not. Can you give us an example of some that did not do anything violent?
The three strikes law. There's a lot of people who are in there because of the three strikes law, who were in there for receiving stolen property or things like that. It was just their third offense.
So again, these were not people who posed any kind of dire threat, who by any definition would pose a threat to other prisoners or to guards, as far as we know. Now, you also had a documentary that was screening here. It was called Concrete and Sunshine. Tell us a little bit about the film.
The film is actually a great informational documentary. It talks about how much we as taxpayers spend on building these prisons. It gives you an outline of year to year, how many prisons we've built in such a short time. It also talks about the effects of solitary confinement, which is very sad.
I understand that there are some very high rates of suicide, among other things. The psychological toll can include suicide. In California, while 7% of inmates are held in isolation, solitary confinement, 39% of the prison suicide attempts are among solitary confinement prisoners.
That's correct.
You have also gone to Washington and Sacramento, I understand, speaking out on for this. What were the results?
I feel that it's going to be a very positive outcome. There have been legislators who have voiced their support and solidarity with us, and we're just waiting to see what's next.
So you're looking to the legislature to make some changes.
Yeah, we need help.
And what about Governor Brown? Have you been in touch with him?
Governor Brown has remained silent throughout this whole thing, and I really have to emphasize that his silence is definitely an endorsement of this torture. We've called, we've written letters, and he has not come out to make any sort of statement or even acknowledge that this is going on.
Now, I understand the United Nations has also spoken out on this recently.
That's correct.
And have they contacted the governor's office as well?
They have just issued a statement urging California to put an end to indefinite solitary confinement.
Is there a petition? If people are concerned about this, where can they get information and what can they do?
Please go to change.org, support the hunger strike, sign the petition, share it on Facebook, email it to your friends. Everybody makes a difference. Everybody counts. They can also call Governor Brown at 916-445-2841. Basically, just call, tell them that you're calling in support of the prison hunger strike and that you urge him to negotiate and to meet the five demands.
Now, I understand that you yourself have a family member that is in solitary confinement, or what they call the chute at these prisons. Shoot.
Yes, it's my older brother.
Now, your own brother has participated in a hunger strike, I understand.
Right.
How long has he been in solitary confinement?
He's been in the chute at Pelican Bay for over 8 years now.
8 years. And why did he wind up in the chute in solitary?
According to the Department of Corrections, his name was on a paper in somebody else's cell. I guess after that, they deemed him an associate.
Just because of suspicion. And so anybody could say anybody is involved or an associate of some kind of criminal activity or suspected criminal activity, and that's enough to land you in there with no way to ever get out.
Exactly.
Wow. Very, very troubling. Never convicted of anything that would mandate the solitary confinement. He never beat up a guard or attacked a prisoner or anything like
never.
That.
Never.
Nothing like that. You visited him. Tell me what the conditions are like where he's living.
It's a really awful place. It's
Which prison is it?
It's Pelican Bay. It's Pelican Bay. They have no access to any sunlight.
Ever? They never. Not even during exercise?
No. Wow. They've got windowless cells, concrete slabs to sleep on with very thin mattresses. No phone calls. They're not allowed any educational services, even if family members want to pay for that themselves. They're denied that right.
Now, you've told me that he looked very pale when you visited him because of the lack of sunlight.
Yes.
And you've also told me that they used to give them vitamin supplements to replace the vitamin D that you normally would get from sunshine, and that's recently been cut off.
I'm not sure if it's recently, but they have taken that away. I believe now we are allowed to purchase it if we want to. But then again, there's a lot of prisoners in there who don't have family members who support them or behind them and are able.
So their health could be negatively impacted
exactly.
by this. Or certainly would be if you have no sunshine and no vitamin D.
Right.
Is there anything else you'd like our listeners to know that we haven't specifically talked about today, Amber?
Actually, I would like to address a statement that Jeffrey Beard had.
The director of the California Department of Corrections?
Yes. He would like the community and society to believe that it's a gang-coerced hunger strike, that it's not about, you know, human rights at all.
What is your view on that?
Well, if it were really a gang-coerced hunger strike, there would be thousands of more people striking right now for fear of retaliation, and that's not what's going on. There's been no reports of retaliation. There's also been no reports of inmate violence over the past 2 months, which
Good
is
point.
The beginning of the hunger strike. The only report of any violence was guard on inmate.
And now the most recent twist in this story, I understand, is that last week a court ruled that they can actually force inmates to be fed through a feeding tube, the same kind of thing we heard about in Guantanamo Bay with the hunger strike down there. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I've been looking into it and things like that, and I've read that force feeding has been condemned as a form of torture by the United Nations.
So the solitary confinement for many years at a time is condemned as torture by the UN, and so is the feeding. And yet California, the state of California, is doing this now to many people. Well, Amber, thank you very much for sharing this very troubling story. And we greatly appreciate you coming on the show on KNSJ's East County Magazine show.
I thank you so much for having me.
This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. 50 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. gave his now famous I Have a Dream speech to a crowd of marchers in Washington, D.C. who came from across the nation in support of civil rights. That movement, in 1963, led ultimately to signing of the Civil Rights Act. On August 29th of this year, a new crowd of people from across the nation packed the Capitol Mall for a commemoration of that historic event. President Barack Obama delivered a speech at the Lincoln Memorial site of Dr. King's famed oration. The March on Washington teaches us that we are not trapped by the mistakes of history, that we are masters of our fate, the president said, but it also teaches us that the promise of this nation will only be kept when we work together. We'll have to reignite the embers of empathy and fellow feeling, the coalition of conscience that found expression in this place 50 years ago. You can view a video of the president's speech on our website at eastcountymagazine.org. Attorney General Eric Holder also spoke, alluding to the Supreme Court's recent decision weakening the Voting Rights Act. He said, "This morning we affirm that this struggle must and will go on in the cause of our nation's quest for justice until every eligible American has the chance to exercise his or her right to vote, unencumbered by discriminatory or unneeded procedures, rules, or practices. It must go on until our criminal justice system can ensure that all are treated equally and fairly in the eyes of the law," the Attorney General said. He added, "It must go on until those now living and generations yet to be born can be assured the rights and opportunities that have been too long denied to too many." Other speakers included former President Bill Clinton and TV celebrity Oprah Winfrey. Congressman John Lewis, the only surviving speaker from the original march half a century ago, also spoke. Congressman Lewis was interviewed by East County Magazine earlier this year at Comic-Con in San Diego regarding his new book, March, that recalled the turbulent civil rights era. "We have made a lot of progress, but we are not there yet," he said back then. His book is now a New York Times bestseller. In Washington on Thursday, Congressman Lewis recalled, 50 years later, we can ride anywhere we want to ride, stay anywhere we want to stay. Those signs that say white and color are gone. You won't see them anymore, except in a museum, a book, or in a video. But, he added, that America still has a long way to go toward full equality, citing the recent Trayvon Martin verdict as an example of what he considers unequal racial treatment under the judicial system. Some speakers, including former President Clinton, reflected on how times have changed, and then issued a call to action. "We face terrible political gridlock now," Clinton noted. "Yes, there remains racial inequalities in employment, income, health, wealth, incarcerations, and the victims and perpetrators of violent crime. But we don't face beatings, lynchings, and shootings for our political beliefs anymore." He urged, "I would respectfully suggest that Martin Luther King did not live and die to hear his heirs whine about political gridlock. It is time to stop complaining and put our shoulders against the stubborn gates holding the American people back," Clinton said. Speaker John Boehner and Majority Leader Eric Cantor, the House's two most senior Republicans, were also invited to speak at the 50th anniversary of the historic March on Washington, but they declined. Civil rights activist Julian Bond said the event organizers asked a long list of Republicans to come, and to a man and a woman, they said no. He faulted Republican officials for turning their backs on civil rights. He concluded, "They seem to want to get black votes. They're not going to get them this way." You can read more about the historic march and hear voices from the original marchers at the 50th anniversary website, 50thAnniversaryMarchOnWashington.com. For KNSJ and East County Magazine, this is Miriam Raftery. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation. This is Miriam Raftery for KNSJ and East County Magazine, bringing you a local government report. San Diego's City Council has voted unanimously to set November 19th as the special election date for voters to choose a new mayor. Councilmember Todd Gloria will serve as acting mayor starting at 5 p.m. August 30th, when Mayor Bob Filner's resignation takes effect, until a new mayor is seated after the election. The special election is expected to cost taxpayers approximately $6 million, but that amount could increase sharply, since if no candidate wins a majority of votes, a runoff election would be held. So far, at least 13 candidates have filed papers with the Registrar of Voters indicating an intention to run. But only one, former Assemblyman Nathan Fletcher, is well known so far. Fletcher resigned from the Republican Party to become an independent and, more recently, a Democrat. He is best known for authoring Chelsea's Law to crack down on child predators. Who else may throw their hats into the ring? Other potential names being talked about in local political circles include Acting Mayor Todd Gloria, a Democrat, and Councilman Carl DeMaio, a Republican, who himself faces allegations that he exposed himself in a public restroom at City Hall. DeMaio has denied those claims, which were made by Councilman Ben Wessel. Additional possible candidates being touted include former Assemblywoman Lori Saldana, who is currently president of Sierra Club locally and who warned party officials about Filner's behavior before his election, giving her a moral high ground if she does enter the race. Republican Councilman Kevin Falconer and Democratic Councilwoman Marty Emerald, a former TV newswoman, are also potential candidates, along with County Supervisor Ron Roberts, a Republican. Mayor Filner has agreed to resign as part of a deal reached with the city to limit taxpayers' potential legal liability over sexual harassment allegations made against him. Who San Diegans choose as their next mayor will have an impact on East County. Energy policy is a key concern of consumer and ratepayer advocates, as well as environmentalists. Mayor Filner had been outspoken in opposing the Quail Brush gas power plant near Mission Trails. He also supported rooftop solar instead of massive wind, solar, and power line projects in our rural and desert areas. He also has called for an energy cooperative to give consumers an alternative to SDG&E, which has another rate hike taking effect September 1st. With just 2 months to campaign, candidates for mayor will face far fewer debates than Filner and his political opponents did. Expect character issues to be at the forefront in this mayoral race. Special elections tend to have low turnout, which traditionally has favored Republicans. Some analysts have also suggested that women candidates will likely have an advantage in this race as voters seek to avoid scandals plaguing the next San Diego mayor.
This is Iris Neal. Join us for Job Talks, bringing you news about great jobs and growing our regional economy.
Job Talks on KNSJ's East County Magazine show is supported by our listeners and by the nonprofit San Diego Building Trades Family Housing Corporation, building our future.
Good afternoon. My name is Zima Jacobson, and I will be hosting for Iris Neal today on Job Talks. This afternoon, I have Cindy Gompers-Graves, the president and CEO of the South County Economic Development Council with us. Thank you for being here today, Cindy.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to talk today about the South County EDC and some of the projects that you all are involved in. Can you let our listeners know just exactly what is the South County Economic Development Corporation?
Sure. We're a 501c3 nonprofit who promotes economic development and encourages investments in the cities of Chula Vista, southern part of San Diego, Imperial Beach, Coronado, and National City. We work with businesses to help them expand and also to help them locate into South County.
So the EDC isn't a chamber of commerce. It brings together business and community members, elected officials, and regional officials. Is there more than that involved?
Yeah, we're actually not a chamber of commerce. South County has a lot of great chambers of commerce, and we support them, but they're also part of South County EDC because we're building the future vision for South County. A little bit different than a chamber of commerce who focuses on the here and now and connecting the business community, we're focused on the here and now and moving forward into the future.
Now, you have a relationship with Mexico and Baja. Are you working on economic development between the two countries here in South County?
We're very privileged to work with our partners in Northern Baja, particularly DATEC and Tijuana CDT. That takes on two different hats. Sometimes we're working with businesses who want a presence on both sides of the border. And sometimes we're working on areas of mutual interest, like reducing border wait times.
That's great. Now, let's talk about the South County Vision Project that you have started. I know it's taken a few years of planning and discussion to finally get this all underway. So why don't you give us a little background on how this all came to be?
Well, South County is very privileged to have many, many projects that are all coming to fruition within the next 2 years. That includes the new university that's being planned on the eastern part of Chula Vista, or the new port of entry in eastern Otay Mesa, Otay 2, with the toll road SR-11 connecting it. It also includes the Chula Vista Bayfront, the redevelopment of Brownfield, Pond 20, and lots of other things. The problem is all these projects were planned in silos, and there's a need to connect them to make sure we're building on the synergy that exists with every single project. So, for example, the cross-border terminal that should be breaking ground before the end of the year, what does that mean to the development of the Chula Vista Bayfront? And should we be looking at different types of programs at the university, maybe aviation repair or aviation design, to tie in both Brownfield and the cross-border terminal? So the fact that they're being planned in silos, we feel like we could be missing some more economic opportunities, and we're looking to connect those with this effort.
That sounds like a major, major effort here. So how are you doing now? You've got some funding, and you've started taking surveys?
Yeah, thanks to the generosity of many of our jurisdictions, as well as San Diego Foundation and many, many of our members, South County EDC has raised over $150,000 for this effort. And our first venture was to go and ask the public what they want. You don't ever want to do long-term planning without getting public input in and seeing the public's ideas and what they think. So right now we're on track to get 4,000 surveys that should happen towards the end of September, early part of October. As of this morning, we have already collected over 2,400, but there's still room, lots of room, for people to chime in and tell us what they think should happen in South County.
Do you have to live in South County to fill out the survey?
No, actually, there's advantages to both. If you live in South County, your perspective is valued, as well as if you live outside South County and you're looking into South County, your perspective is valued also. So we'd like to hear from both.
Can you do it on the internet? How would one go about filling out the survey?
There's a couple ways you can do it. One is we do have survey takers all the time, and you're welcome to approach one of them, or they'll even approach you. But the easiest way to do it for your listeners is to do it online, and our website address is www.scedcvisioning.wordpress.com. And you can go online. It'll take you about 5 minutes. Plus, you can also click onto some other sites and hear more about the projects that are happening in South County, too.
That's great. Now, when you look at the projects that are going on and you look at the jobs that are going to come in for these projects, so you want to make sure that the supporting industries and the supporting businesses will create the jobs for the folks in the South County and East County that would be able to give them a good wage and some benefits. Have you discussed any of that?
We've discussed in terms of looking at the jobs, particularly as it relates to Chula Vista Bayfront, because that was a lot of the conversation when we were looking at a specific developer. So that is being worked on by the Port of San Diego, and that definitely will come out to play at the Chula Vista Bayfront. Depending on specific projects like the university, like Brownfield, those are negotiations that are still having to happen, but those are things that are always being looked at, is what kind of jobs are being created, what kind of salaries they pay, and also what kind of spinoff effect they have. What kind of economic impact does that particular business have? How many other jobs will it generate?
We all know Torrey Pines has the biotech. And if you look at South Bay around this new university, are there going to be some industries around there or some research development around there that would complement the university and also bring in some research into the South Bay?
I think UCSD is an excellent model for a university promoting economic development at its optimum level, and we'd be honored to do something like UCSD. There is a tech park that is planned next to the university, and I think that we all agree that the university must have some kind of R&D component to it to ensure that we are spinning off products that could be manufactured right here in San Diego County, and particularly from where we sit in the Otay Mesa, Eastern Chula Vista portion of San Diego County.
Well, we're real fortunate that Chula Vista is about 13 miles to the border of Mexico. You have Brownfield, which has a customs section in Brownfield. So a lot of folks can fly into Brownfield and then go down to Mexico to go to their businesses there or to their this side of the border where they have their other businesses. Do you see a lot of that development happening in Otay Mesa where it will continue to grow and also with the new border crossing?
Otay Mesa and Eastern Chula Vista will obviously very much continue to grow. As a matter of fact, there's some projections that show Chula Vista's population doubling in the next 20 to 30 years because of all the development happening there. And as you look at Mexico, Northern Baja is growing, particularly more on the eastern side. And their projections for planning have Tecate and Tijuana connected in one continuous type of development along the toll road. So there's going to be a lot of opportunities there. And as we look at companies coming to locate on both sides of the border. The Millennia Project, which is a McMillan project, has set up corporate offices in their development plan that are specifically geared towards attracting corporations that want a U.S. presence and a Mexico presence and are creating commercial facilities, office buildings, to handle that type of transaction and that type of business in their facilities.
So the Vision Project is actually South County's way of doing some self-determination of how they develop and how they grow into the future and what kind of a community that they want and will have in the next 10, 15, 20 years.
I kind of like to think as a visioning project, as a seize the day kind of moment. We want to make sure we're capturing every single opportunity. And sometimes you look at things in silos and that means one thing. Sometimes when you connect them with other things, it means a lot more. And for our residents of South County, they deserve a lot more. A lot more jobs. If you don't believe me, come watch the mass exodus that happens on the 5 and 8:05 in the morning. They deserve a better quality of life, not to spend all that time on the road. And they deserve the jobs, and the students and the children in South County deserve access to higher education that will come with the university, and that is sorely missing in South County right now.
I just have one little question here about the future prison development in Otay. It looks like at the current time there's going to be two new prisons built. I know a state one, and I think perhaps a federal prison. Can you give us an update on that and how that's going to impact your vision project?
Right now, there's one that is being considered by the state of California that is an addition, if you will, to their existing facility out there in Otay Mesa. That's plans for another 800-bed facility. There is a private prison that has also received approval that is planning on leasing out the facility to the federal government that will work more as an immigration facility, if you will. There is some concern about, there were also several other prisons being discussed for that area. There is some concern about having a perception problem when you have a prison cluster located and you're trying to get people to build on the 2,000 acres of industrial land that the county has set aside in East Otay Mesa that is adjacent to this prison. So as you look at more prisons, you have to stop and say, when is enough enough? And when do we start serving inmates from outside of our region and you start becoming the draw for prisoners as opposed to serving your existing population? And for that reason, and mainly because of the potential negative impact this could have on the investment opportunities in South County. South County EDC has said no more prisons. We're not going to support and will actually actively work against any more proposed prisons going on in the Otay Mesa area.
On a lighter note, how about the arts and culture? Is there an emphasis on that in the South County?
You know, South County EDC about 3 years ago, and to the credit of what used to be called the San Diego Convention and Visitors Bureau, we entered into contract to help San Diego Convention and Visitors Bureau, the Tourism Marketing District, promote South County. And that is an ongoing contract that has about 2 more years left on it because none of the arts and culture was being promoted in South County as a tourism destination. But we have so much. People are used to coming to the Sleep Train / formerly Cricket Amphitheater, driving there, staying there for a concert and leaving. And there is so much more. We have what we believe to be the only outdoor surfboard museum in Imperial Beach. We have fabulous, fabulous playhouses. Coronado has one of the region's most prominent playhouses. Lamb's Player Theater is there. There's just so much, and we are so culturally rich, and especially with our proximity to the border and also the Pacific Rim, that concentration really hosts and shows off, if you will, the kinds of arts and culture throughout not only our statues and our playhouses and stuff, but even our architecture and our way of life, and we celebrate that.
And don't forget, you have the Eastlake All-Stars who just won the Little League World Series National Championship. So we congratulate the South Bay on that. I think the whole region is very proud of those young men.
We are so proud, and this makes counting now one world, one national for Chula Vista. So if you want your kids to get in the pro ball game, you want to visit us in Chula Vista.
Well, thank you so much for being here with us today, Cindy. And again, good luck with the Vision Project and good luck to South County EDC.
Thank you so much. It's our pleasure.
KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, your network for social justice.
It's back to school time, and the San Diego County Animal Services is urging students to hit the books and relax with a study buddy kitty at your side. County Animal Services' three animal shelters are overstocked on cats, so for a limited time only, adoption fees for cats that are 6 months and older are just $5 through the month of September. Yes, you can adopt a cat for just $5. County Animal Services Director Don Danielson says, "Our three county shelters are packed with gorgeous cats right now, and we figure since school is back in session, now is a great time to adopt the perfect study buddy. One of the 10 best habits to be successful in school is to have a study buddy. Our cats will let you study in peace and quiet, review your work, and offer helpful critiques without a word of criticism," she claims. While cat adoptions are just $5, kitten adoptions are $58, but there's a special for that, too. Under the Better with a Buddy program, you can adopt one cat or kitten, and any second feline adoption is free. All animals are neutered or spayed, microchipped, and vaccinated before going home with new families. For more information on adoptions at any of the three county animal shelters, call 619-767-2675. Or to see photos of the animals up for adoption, visit Animal Services website at www.sddac.com. That stands for San Diego Department of Animal Control.com.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Maness of the Maness Vineyards Estate.
That's Greg Maness from Maness Vineyards here on East County Magazine Live. And we're going to introduce you to another very informative and what I feel is a very influential person in the wine and vines industry movement. Ladies and gentlemen, Don Rutkoff. Don, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Greg. Happy to be here.
Give our listeners a little story of what your life's all about.
Okay. I'm originally from the East Coast and moved to California like many people did, seeking fame and fortune in the early 1980s. And I lived in San Diego for a while. Got a degree in finance from San Diego State University. I moved up to the San Francisco area, and I got an MBA from San Francisco State University, and I worked for Bank of America for about 10 years doing budgets and financial analysis and risk management. I liked wine, and I thought, you know, I'm here in the Bay Area. Napa's not that far away, so why don't I see if I can go to work in the wine industry?
Now, did you do some specialty schooling and training in viticulture and AVA?
Yes, I was able to go back to school, and I took some of the seminars that they offer at UC Davis on sensory analysis and chemical composition of wine, and then I went to school in the classes at Napa Valley College. It owns 2 5-acre vineyards in the heart of Napa. We used to grow and sell grapes to Stagsleep wine cellars, and the school offers 3 different AA degrees and about 30 or 35 different courses in the wine industry. So it's a very extensive program.
So you got a lot of information and a lot of training out of that. You have started a new career down here and got some of the colleges kind of buzzing. Can you tell us a little bit about where you're teaching these college-level classes about vines and the wines movements and the new ordinances?
Well, 2 years after moving here, I wanted to get a little bit more work under my belt, get more hours, and I thought, you know, San Diego looks like a pretty good place to grow, and it certainly is a place where people are drinking a lot of wine, and we have a big hospitality industry. So I called up my friend Steve, who runs the wine program at Napa College, and I asked him what he thought about the idea of taking some of the classes and transplanting them and using them down here, and he said it was an absolutely great idea. So I started sending emails and making phone calls to the four-year colleges, but especially all the community colleges, in the hospitality programs, in the science programs, in agriculture, any different department I could think of, if they wanted to start teaching wine classes. That here I was, I've got two college degrees plus college education on top of that, and teach the science of viticulture, how the plants grow, why they are what they are, how to harvest them, selling the business side of wine. And after, it took a little while, but finally got Cuyamaca College. Cuyamaca had actually called Steve at Napa College 2 weeks before I did and asked him if he knew of anybody that could teach down here. So when I called Steve, not only did he say it's a good idea, but he said, hold on a minute, let me dig up this email or phone call or whatever. And he put me in touch with Cuyamaca, and I got in touch with them and put together a proposal. It took about five or six proposals to finally hit the right one, what the right match between what the continuing education program was all about, or what they needed from an instructor and what I could teach.
Right, and so you've taught a couple classes out there now. Your current program is about how to obtain boutique winery licensure and the bylaws and in-laws and legalization of all those different steps. Amazing stuff. What do you got planned for this upcoming fall? What's your next class?
We're going to teach two classes in the fall semester here at Cuyamaca. One is going to be Wines of the World. Grab your passport. We're not going to be tasting, unfortunately, but we will be teaching people how to look at a French wine label, a Spanish wine, you know, Italian wine, how to look at it, how to read the label, how to understand what it is and compare it to a California wine. And then the second half of the fall session, I'm going to teach the business class again that I'm finishing up right now. It's called Creating a Successful Winery Business.
Nice.
And this class touches on federal law, state and local law, the county ordinance for having a tasting room. It touches on sales and marketing, using the internet a little bit, and some accounting issues. So it's an all-around general purpose class, what's involved in being in the wine industry, what it takes to get started, and where to go.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Mr. Don Rutkoff, from all of us here at East County Magazine Live and Manus Vineyards, thanks for tuning in today. Don, thank you very much for your time. Appreciate the interview.
You've been listening to Vines and Wines with Greg Manus, proprietor of the Manus Vineyards Estate. Visit the website at manusvineyards.com.
An Amera Media production.
This is Helen Ofield from the Lemon Grove Historical Society, bringing you the sounds of history. My guest is Carl Calvert of the Board of Directors of the Motor Transport Museum in Campo. Carl, you're back a second time because the story is so exciting. Welcome.
Thank you.
If you have not visited the Motor Transport Museum, located in a fabulous old mill, Google Motor Transport Museum on Highway 94. And women who are listening, this museum is neither pretty nor cute. It is simply amazing. So get your girlfriends, get on the computer, and then get out there and take a look. Carl, in a nutshell, what's the mission statement of the Motor Transport Museum?
Our primary interest is educational in nature, to educate people about transportation history, especially in San Diego County, because we've had a lot of it here over the years. And in addition to education, we are an area where people can come and volunteer and work and learn about automotive history and skills about how to preserve and restore vehicles. For example, people can come and learn how to weld or to do upholstery or many different types of talent. And many of our volunteers that now participate at the museum come from these fields.
So in other words, you are really made for both men and women.
Oh, yes, yes. And we have a large library of periodicals and books of history and maintenance of vehicles. That's a treasure trove of history. And people contact us from all over the country wanting information on particular aspects of maybe how to maintenance or tune up a vehicle that's antique or old.
Indeed.
And we have a wonderful library of that kind of data.
Well, this is a giant constituency right across the country, and never more so than in San Diego County.
Yes.
Now, as you are in the business of restoring vehicles that served in so many historical capacities, You've been working on one in particular that relates to Julian.
Yes.
Dates from the early 1920s. Can you share that story
sure.
with us?
Our current project that we're just finishing with is a bus that was used as a stage to take people back and forth to Julian.
Oh.
This is our second major restoration project. Our first one was a 1912 stage built by the Mack Company. And the one we just finished now is a 1924 Cadillac. And it's taken us quite a few years to complete this restoration because it has a wooden body, and then it's covered with metal and upholstery, and you can't really see the wood in it. But it took a lot of work, woodwork type of work, to restore this vehicle. But we've restored it to where it's usable today, and we've restored it for the Julian Historical Society that actually owns it. So,
oh, my goodness. So there's wonderful cooperation between
yes.
these museums in East County.
Right.
Now, you're working with skilled volunteers.
Yes.
How are you funding something like this?
Well, the Julian Historical Society has been our main source of being able to help us buy parts to be able to restore it. Our museum has furnished the labor to restore it on a volunteer basis. We've not charged for any of our work to restore this vehicle.
So this is truly loving hands at work.
It is,
I've
yes.
I've been to the museum, and it's just a literal sea of often very exotic-looking vehicles.
Oh, yes. We have quite a number of vehicles that date back to 1912. That's our earliest vehicle. Some of these vehicles are chain drive, or they have solid rubber tires. And we have quite a collection. We are approaching 300 vehicles in our collection.
My goodness. Now, in addition to coming to the museum, people could go to the Julian Historical Society, their upcoming events
yes.
where you would be able to see the 1924
where they can
stage.
See these vehicles run and possibly even be able to ride in them. The Julian Historical Society has rebuilt the original building these vehicles were kept in when they were in use. It's called the Carriage House. So anybody that goes to Julian, if they're interested in seeing these vehicles, they can ask where the Carriage House is and view them.
Carl, we mentioned that the Motor Transport Museum is located in an old mill. And
yes.
What is that building?
Well, in 1924, a company came to San Diego here called Standard Sanitary Manufacturing and built this building right on the railroad line to process an ore that was mined in Campo called feldspar. Feldspar is used to make porcelain, pottery, and glass mainly, but they were using this product to make sinks and bathtubs, bathroom fixtures.
Yeah.
So they built this building there to process the material, and then it was shipped out by rail to their facility in Richmond, California, where they built the bathtubs and the sinks. So the sinks were not built here.
Carl, what is the website for your museum?
Yes, motortransportmuseum.org.
What's the phone number?
619-478-2492.
Folks, you run, don't walk. It is a really amazing place.
I want to thank
you for coming by, Carl.
I've enjoyed our visit today.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning into The Sounds of History. I'm Helen Oakfield.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Antonio F. Viana, author and educator. My guest has written 20 books and 6 screenplays since 2003. He's also created 3 popular workshops: Re-Careering at Any Age, How to Write a Book and Get Published, and How to Write a Screenplay. Welcome, Antonio. It's a pleasure talking with you.
Thanks for inviting me.
You have written 18 novels and 2 nonfiction books in a period of 10 years, and yet you also work as instructor and area chair of business at the University of Phoenix here in San Diego. How do you find the time and the motivation to write so much and on such a variety of themes?
To me, it's all about commitments and priorities. I mean, essentially, I do what I value in my life and where I want to spend my time.
Uh-huh.
This means that I don't do a lot of things, but I rather do a few things that I try to do very well, like being an expert. And my life is a 24/7 life because I can write anytime during the day or evening or anytime during the week. I can control what I do, and I really, really like that. So I do what I do because I want to become good at it and not become a generalist.
So you have to cut back on leisure activities.
I come back on a lot of leisure activities and a lot of sleep because there's only 24 hours in this day to be able to do what I want to do.
So in a typical day, how many hours do you write?
I'll schedule my hours for the whole week, probably on a Sunday. So yesterday I looked at my calendar and asked myself, what are my projects for this whole week? Mm-hmm. And I've got essentially two projects going on in the area of writing. And I'll look at probably 2 or 3 hours each day committed to some form of writing or editing or researching in the projects that I'm working on.
Very organized. You've been called a prime example of someone who's re-careered himself. I mean, I know that in your former life, you were an Air Force officer and human resources executive. So how did you transition from that to author?
I was working in Northern California, specifically San Francisco, with a professional medical group, and I was the chief HR executive. Mm-hmm. But I felt at a point in time that I needed to switch. I had the what I call the itch to switch. And I think everybody develops the itch sometime in their career,
right,
whether it's at 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, or whatever. But I developed the itch. But I really didn't know what I wanted to do if I had left, changed the human resources executive role. So like any good business person, I did an inventory of who I was and what I wanted to be. And so I analyzed my skills and my strengths and my weaknesses and my passions and all the things that go into sort of a self-evaluation. And I figured that I could do a couple of things very well outside of corporate life. And there was one thing that I was petrified of doing that I thought it could become a developmental opportunity for me. So I gave myself the title of ACE. A stands
ACE,
A-C-E.
Okay.
A stands for author, C stands for career coach, and E stands for educator. I could be a career coach and educator pretty easily, but I really was petrified of writing. So writing became my developmental opportunity that I decided to commit to. And today, 10 years later, I'm really spending most of my time doing the writing. So it was a business plan that I created, and I considered myself to be the business. And I needed to figure out how I could make money as me, as that person who runs the business.
So if we could say that some writers are born and some are made, you made yourself.
I made myself. I was not an avid writer or an avid reader in the day. In fact, even today, I don't do a lot of reading of full books. I do reading for purposes of research and for looking at how writers are able to tell a compelling story or develop compelling characters.
Craft. Well, I know you've written novels in a variety of genres, books on espionage, murder, love stories, ghost stories, and even a vampire trilogy. Which book did you enjoy the most writing and why? And is it difficult to cross types of books?
Yeah, I'm always asked this question about what my favorite book is. And so I will answer that in a sort of circular way. I have two favorite books. One is my first book. It's called The Tale from a Ghost Dance. I had no idea what I was doing when I was writing this book. I was experimenting with my writing style. I was experimenting with creating stories and characters. And it's probably, although the book is still in print, it is the worst crafted book of all time.
If you do say so yourself.
If I do say so myself, but I love it because I look at the books that I'm writing now and I can see the growth that I have been able to accomplish in my writing career. So my second favorite book will always be my last book because it shows what I'm really capable of doing. And that last book is called Scarlet Rose, and it just came out in January of this year.
I know that you've published independently, like so many authors are choosing to do in this new age. What made you go that route, and how do you market yourself?
I'm a control freak. I want to control what I do, and I want to own what I do. And the way to do that for me is look at independent publishing. So I'm with a print-on-demand publisher called Author Solutions. Essentially, I give them my manuscript, and I tell them what to do, how to put it into a book format. I then pay them services for marketing, for editing, for all kinds of things that I would have to pay someone else to do if I was even with a traditional publisher. So the notion of independent publishing allows me to control what I want to do and market it in a way that I think is appropriate, and also because I now do screenplays, because I own the novel, I can adapt that novel to a screenplay right. without asking permission from anyone.
Right. And do you have any screenplays that are being optioned or?
I have 6 screenplays now being looked at in Hollywood. 5 mm-hmm. of them are adapted from my novels. The 6th one, which is called Desperate, that just came out probably a month ago, mm-hmm. is an original screenplay. And the idea is to leverage the novel and the screenplay towards Hollywood.
One last question, Antonio. What are you writing now, and when will it be available?
I'm completing a novel called Crush. It's a suspense drama thriller novel. It's about telemarketing scams mm-hmm. and how this person overcomes a telemarketing scam. It probably will come out in January of next year.
Okay, look forward to it. Our time is up, but thanks again for joining us. For more information on Antonio F. Viana, please visit his website at www.vianabooks4u.com, and that's the number 4 and the letter U. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you've been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
This is your weekend weather forecast for KNSJ's East County Magazine show. A flash flood watch remains in effect through tonight in the foothills of East County. There is a chance of thunderstorms tonight. Partly cloudy weather is forecast for Saturday and Sunday mornings, with a chance of afternoon thunderstorms. Sunshine is forecast for Monday, however, just in time for those Labor Day picnics. Along the coast, there's a chance of showers and thunderstorms tonight. This weekend, expect sunny skies in the afternoons along the coastal areas with some early morning fog. Temperatures should reach the high 70s along the coast and the mid-80s inland this weekend, reaching into the 90s by Monday in mountain and valley areas. Have a safe and festive Labor Day weekend.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Ariel Johansson, bringing you the most exciting festivals, events, and attractions each week. This Labor Day weekend brings you the 3-day Barona Indian Powwow event and a 4-day arts event put on by the Julian Arts Guild. September Song is the name of the fine arts show this weekend in Julian. The 4-day Julian Art Guild's Fine Art Show will include local and regional artists of various mediums, oil, acrylic, and watercolor paintings, drawings in pen, pencil, and pastel, photography, printmaking, ceramics, jewelry, collage, and assemblage, glass, mosaic, sculpture, and more. The theme, September Song, will be reflected in landscapes and other creative works. The show runs from Friday, August 30th through Monday, September 2nd. From 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. each day at the Julian Town Hall on Main Street in Julian. The opening reception will be held on Friday, August 30th from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. when you can meet the artists. Admission to the art show is free, and each day different artists will be available to talk about their work. Barona's 43rd annual powwow takes place this weekend starting Friday, August 30th and ending on Sunday, September 1st, at the Barona Baseball Field at Barona Indian Reservation in Lakeside. There is free admission and camping. Contest dancing includes gourd dancing, hand drum contest, and men's fancy dance. A 76th annual barbecue event is taking place in Descanso this Sunday, September 1st, at Our Lady of Light Church on Riverside Drive. The barbecue features food, pies, craft, and game booths, and entertainment by the Honky Tonk Kings. The fun begins at 11 a.m. and continues till 6 p.m. Hacienda Casablanca in El Cajon features musicians each Tuesday evening, as well as special pricing. This Tuesday, guitarist and vocalist Michael J. Dwyer will be playing 60s through 80s acoustic rock, folk, and American covers, as well as his originals. He will be playing from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Wednesday night concerts in the garden continue at Cottonwood Golf Club through the fall at their golf course in the Rancho San Diego area of El Cajon. Concerts in the Garden, which started this summer, has become so popular that it's being extended through fall. Held every Wednesday night from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m., the event features free live music from one of San Diego's leading bands. Barbecue and drinks are available for purchase. The entertainment changes each week. And on August 28th, Kid Tater's All-Star Dance Jam takes the stage. The Bill McGee Blues Band will be playing for the Dinner and a Concert series at the Prescott Promenade in El Cajon this Friday, August 30th, from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. And the last concert in the Sunset Summer Concert Series at Grossmont Center is Friday, August 30th at 6 p.m. and will feature the Blue Frog Band. Their music includes blues and rock. Don't forget your dancing shoes. The concert location is the Macy's Courtyard in the Grossmont Center Shopping Mall. In Ramona this Saturday, August 31st, there will be a 2013 Summer Reserve Beer Pairing Dinner and Bottle Release at the Chuck Alec Independent Brewers. The event includes a four-course dinner paired with Chuck Alec beers, new beer releases in the tasting room, and two bottles of the 2013 Summer Reserve to take home. Chuck Alec Independent Brewers is located on Main Street in Ramona. Rockin' San Diego. Experience rich geologic beauty and history on a trail guide-led walk in Mission Trails Regional Park. Learn how the gorge was formed and other marvels of nature. Meet at the Visitor Center this Wednesday, August 28th at 9:30 a.m. Please see our calendar for additional hike dates through September and the beginning of October. Also at Mission Trails Regional Park, learn about birds, bees, and me, and the food chain from producers to consumers, and other topics in nature exploring the natural world on a trail guide-led walk. Meets at the Visitor's Center on Saturday, August 31st. The hike goes from 9:30 a.m. to 11 a.m. This same hike is also offered on Sunday, September 1st, at the same time and location. These and other events are all listed on our calendar and in the Festivals and Events section of www.eastcountymagazine.org. See you around, East County!
In the good old summertime, in the good old summertime, strolling through the shady lane with your baby mine. You hold her hand and she holds yours, and that's a very good sign. That she's your tootsie wootsie in the good old summertime.
This is a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. As temperatures climb, it's important to stay cool. Seniors and those without air conditioning are particularly vulnerable to heat-related illness. The county has provided a list of cool zones where you can beat the heat, including places in East County, such as libraries and senior centers. All are free and open to the public during designated hours. You can find a list of school zones in your area at www.eastcountymagazine.org.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's live radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.